This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Preparations are underway for next year's 150th anniversary of the Roebling Suspension Bridge that connects Cincinnati and Covington. When the first pedestrians crossed the Roebling on December 1st, 1866, it was the longest suspension bridge in the world. It's since been surpassed by the Brooklyn Bridge, which was also designed by German immigrant John Roebling. Ahead of the anniversary, there's a new book out, edited by Covington Cincinnati Bridge Committee historian Don Heinrich Toltzman, The John A. Roebling Suspension Bridge, A Full and Complete Description. It's based on the 1867 book by E.F. Farrington that details the construction of the bridge. Don Heinrich Toltzman joins us along with past president of the Bridge Committee, Ralph Wolf, and the chairman of Roebling Fest, Paul Collette, as we talk about the book, the history of the bridge, and get a preview of this month's Roebling Fest. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Paul, Don, and Ralph, thank you so much for being here today. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You know, Don, many of us recognize the name, John A. Roebling. If you live in Cincinnati, you're going to know that name, but how many of us really know him? Who was John Roebling, and what kind of person was he?
Yeah, I think everybody's aware of the bridge, but don't know too much about the man. He was really an amazing person. He was an engineering genius, really a Renaissance man who accomplished a lot within his lifespan of only 63 years. And this coming Sunday, June 12th, is the 210th anniversary of his birth in Germany. And he did study engineering at the Royal Polytechnic Institute in Berlin. He also was a favorite student of Hegel. He worked on road construction in Germany, had a bookstore that even published books, one of which was about America and got him interested in America. And he organized an immigration society in 1831 with his brother, and they brought a group of people to America. They established a settlement in Saxonburg in Pennsylvania. And he then started working on survey projects, canal projects, and in 1841 he started a wire rope business. Wire rope consists of wire that is twisted together. He began to write articles about its use and its value. And then in 1844 he constructed an aqueduct in Pennsylvania, an Allegheny aqueduct that brought a canal over the Allegheny River. And after that, he became very well known because of his wire rope business, the aqueduct, and the articles he had written. And that was the beginning of his fame and his career in America.
Did he actually come up with the idea for the suspension bridge, that cable design, or was that...
The suspension bridge, actually, that goes back century. I think, really, it goes back to even rope bridges that were thrown over gorges. So the concept itself is really very old, the idea of having having towers and with a suspended cables over it and then affixed to the abutments on the side. That was something that... became more increasingly refined, and when he wrote his thesis, he wrote it about a chain link bridge in Bamberg in Bavaria, and he commented on the weaknesses of chain links because they could freeze and break in cold weather. So he refined the concept of a suspension bridge, and so by the 1840s, he really had become a known entity. And that's at the time when he first then was contacted to come to our area to explore the possibility of a suspension bridge here. And the idea of a suspension bridge here had been often discussed by people on both sides of the river. There were business interests, especially in Kentucky and in Lexington. They wanted to have a bridge to connect the communities.
So it's interesting to me that you describe him as a Renaissance man. So this guy was a deep thinker and somewhat philosophical, I take it.
He was a deep thinker. He studied under Hegel, and he was very much influenced by him. He always had an interest in philosophy and metaphysics, and he still has unpublished manuscripts, some of them over 1,000 pages, dealing with the origin of the universe. He also played the piano and the flute. He was a great conversationalist. He also was a workaholic. They said he worked from dawn to dusk every day, and at the end of the day, he filled notebooks with the results of what he had accomplished during the day. His son, Washington, said that they never could recall him having an idle moment. So, and again, he only lived 63 years, and when you think of all he accomplished, his studies in Germany, forming an immigration society, founding a settlement here, having a successful wire rope business, which was extremely successful. He did move it from Pennsylvania to Trenton, New Jersey, where the Roebling Company was located. But it said that he could have just confined himself to that business. But he did engage in these bridge-building projects and was responsible for the construction and design and construction of about 10 bridges.
So he was pretty prolific as a bridge
builder. And three of the bridges are still standing today. And, of course, the Brooklyn Bridge, which our bridge was the prototype of, and an aqueduct bridge as well. But I think we can be especially proud of our bridge, and it does have the name John A. Roebling connected to it. And I have met people from New York who'd had no idea that Roebling built it. So we're pretty proud of having Roebling's name connected to ours.
Ralph, let's talk some about the history of the bridge itself. I mean, how difficult was it to build this bridge? How big of an engineering feat was this?
Well, it was here that Roebling refined. He had gotten a patent on his method of spinning wire cables. And it was here that he actually refined that method. And one of the significant engineering things is that method of spinning the cables, as they call it, is what's still used today to build suspension bridges throughout the world. And should point out maybe that the cables are, it's a continuous spinning of a wire back and forth across the river, and then these are put together. They're not twisted or woven, unlike the wire rope that Don referred to. We use a wire rope, or Roebling used it. It's used for the suspenders and for the stays in the bridge, but the actual main cables that support all the weight, those are these wires that go back and forth, and there's 5,180 in each one of the original cables of these wires. And like I say, they're not twisted. They're parallel and grouped together and then wrapped with a smaller wire.
How dangerous was this work to do? I mean, working with wires like that, I mean, there's a lot of tension there.
Very dangerous. His son, Washington, talks about he had to go out at times in almost gale winds and in the middle of the winter. Of course, I think you're referring more to the tension in the cable.
But, right.
The first thing I thought of when you said dangerous was Washington Roebling describing how he had to go out and repair the little footbridge that they used to work on the cable. And he feared for his life several times.
That's the same footbridge that E.F. Farrington crossed, isn't it?
Yes, it is. He was the first one to cross that. Altogether, I might mention two people lost their lives while working on the bridge. And on the Brooklyn Bridge, there were 20 to 30. So only a few casualties.
Safety record was pretty good in comparison.
Right.
Yeah. So what was Cincinnati like at the time the bridge was being built? What kind of town was this?
Well, the total population of the area on both sides of the river was about 180,000. And when you think about the number of people who crossed the bridge on December 1st and 2nd, the first 2 days it opened to pedestrian traffic, 166,000 people walked across it. So that means just about everybody in the area crossed the bridge, except maybe the young and very old. And it was a time when this was becoming a major business and industrial center. And it had been under siege, of course, during the Civil War, during the siege of Cincinnati. It would have been a prize plum for the Confederacy to have taken this area because there were a lot of manufacturing products that were being produced in this area. And so the population was booming, of course, with immigration and so on. And so a very booming area.
Cincinnati was, I think, the fifth or sixth largest city in the country, though, at that time.
And was this the first bridge to cross the Ohio Don?
There was a bridge that was built by a competitor, Charles Ellet, that was on the Ohio River. But to completely cross the river at this point, this was the first bridge.
Now, I think I mentioned 1866 as being the year the pedestrians crossed. I may have that
That's
wrong.
That's correct.
That is
yes.
correct? That was
yes.
The,
yes.
Okay.
And it was on New Year's Day that it was officially opened. On New Year's Day in 1867, and that's why our 150th will be celebrated at Roebling Fest in the coming year.
So how many years did it take to finish the bridge, Ralph?
Well, they started in 1856, so and then it was halted in 58 because of they ran out of money, really, and then the Civil War came along, so it wasn't resumed again until 1863, and then completed in 1867.
So what changes have been made to the bridge over the years?
Well, there's been numerous changes. The first was in the 1890s when they brought in Hildebrand to add additional cables, and he put the trusses on and widened the roadway. They had found some problems with the cables at the anchorages, and they had to strengthen the bridge, so he added the additional cables. That was the first major reconstruction. Then when the state bought the bridge in 1953, they added a mesh floor.
So it was originally a wood deck, right?
It was a wooden deck until the 1950s, yes,
and
sir.
That's when we got the metal grid that we have today.
Yes. And, of course, the approaches changed, too, because originally it went to Front Street in Cincinnati, and then during the 1890s construction, they extended it to Second Street, and then finally in 1918-21, they extended it onto Third Street, and that got it pretty well out of floodwater, where before that there was a steep grade on the Cincinnati end, 5% grade, and also it was susceptible to flooding.
Initially, the bridge was a toll bridge, and
really?
So a foot passenger would have to pay a fare of 3 cents. You could get a coupon booklet that had 100 trips for one and one-fourth cents each, and there were charges that went up for a horse and cart, horse and carriage. There were even charges for hogs and sheep. Of course, hogs had to be driven to market to Cincinnati for butchering over there. So there were different fares in place, and they were kept in place up until 63 when the Brent Spence Bridge was built. There were tolls on the bridge. So a lot of interesting items of interest about the bridge.
Well, and then the book that you have edited, which was originally done by E.F. Farrington, John A. Roebling Suspension Bridge, A Full and Complete Description, he gives a lot of the details of all the different components and parts that were used in the bridge.
He does go into a lot of the details, technical and mechanical. And what's really interesting about him, he worked on the original construction of the bridge. Then he went to New York and worked on the Brooklyn Bridge, and then he came back and worked in the 1890s on the reconstruction that Ralph was talking about. So he was thoroughly well-versed with working on the bridge and provide a lot of details about him in the book about his life. He's a very interesting person, kind of a Renaissance person.
So he's kind of like Roebling then.
Kind of like Roebling, and I think Roebling himself was such a genius that he attracted a lot of people like him. A lot of interesting and fascinating people. So these are some of the things that we'll be exploring at Roebling Fest. It is a celebration of art, architecture, history, and engineering. It's coming up Saturday, June 18th, and Ralph has put together a program of speakers. I don't know if you want to mention those, Ralph.
Well, let's we've got a call. Let's take the call real quickly, and then we'll come back. We'll finish up talking about Roebling Fest, because that's going to be very interesting this year, especially with the 150th anniversary coming up next year. But let's get Frank in Camp Washington in. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Sounds really interesting. Hey, when they were building the Brooklyn Bridge, didn't they have to pressurize the caissons to get workers down there to keep water out?
On the Brooklyn Bridge?
That's right, on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Did they have the same?
Did they have to do that here?
No.
No, okay.
So caissons was not a problem on the
towers here were originally, they were on the shoreline, and whereas in Brooklyn, the towers were built in the East River, which necessitated caissons. And those are what Washington, Roebling, the Sun worked on. But that wasn't necessary because the towers weren't originally in the river stream. You know, when you look at older pictures of the river, you'll see that the towers are on the shoreline. But when they dammed up the river, then now the river is much higher on the towers than it was originally.
And caissons is what we would call the bends today, right?
That's what Washington... Caisson disease is the bends. Right.
So thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And let's talk some about Roebling Fest, which is coming up. Paul, what's the emphasis this year as you head into the 150th anniversary?
Well, this year we're trying to build towards next year, and we're trying to rebrand ourselves as basically focusing on the history of the bridge. We've tried to be too many things to too many people in the past, but this year, as we mentioned, we're going to have the presentations. We're going to have a dedication for a donor that provided some funding for the uplighting, which has just recently been provided, finished. The bridge, if you look at it, any of our citizens out there listening, is completely lighted now from the river to the flags for the first time in a while. But Roebling Fest, which is our 12th annual Roebling Fest, and as I mentioned, we're going to focus on the history. We also have always provided guided tours of both the bridge, the murals, and the statues. And this year, from the Kenton County Public Library, we're going to have a tour of historic Covington. So these guided tours, all but the bridge tours themselves, are free. We'd like for people to come down and learn more about, you know, the area, the history. We have a history tent that has 8 to 10 exhibitors from various museums, Beringer Crawford Museum, Baker Hunt, Ramage, Civil War. So we are really more about educating people than having them come down for music and drink, although that had in the past had been a feature in the evening. This year we're going to have music from 9 o'clock until 5, and it's going to be complimentary music rather than featured, and that, you know, so that people will hear music, but they're not coming specifically for the music.
Paul, what kind of response do you get to Roebling Fest?
Well, you know, it depends on the weather, quite frankly. So, but we might get anywhere from 500 to 1,500 people, and we'd like to up that to be 1,000 to 2,000, and then next year we're hoping that it will be even more than that, because we have some things in the works that might drive that. We're talked to people about a laser light show. We've talked to Northern Kentucky University's informatics department about producing a guided, self-guided app to walk the bridge. And, you know, we may have a look and learn kind of thing like they had in Over the Rhine for people to learn more about the city of Covington and Cincinnati and perspective from the ridge.
Do you find that the local people are proud of this bridge as one of Cincinnati's
exceptionally
landmarks?
Proud of it. And you might notice that all of our media have the Roebling Bridge as their backdrop. Now, we'd like to get them to, you know, pony up some money to maybe help us out, but we have no, you know, rights to do that. But, yeah, people who live in the Ascent say that they see people there through all hours. They see wedding parties coming if it's a nice day and having photographs there. And so I think people take great pride in the bridge.
And real quickly, the dates again for Roebling Fest?
June 18th from 9 until 5 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. Covington Cincinnati Bridge Committee historian Don Heinrich Toltzman, editor of the John A. Roebling Suspension Bridge, A Full and Complete Description. It's based on the 1867 book by E.F. Farrington. Also the past president of the Bridge Committee, Ralph Wolf, and the chairman of Roebling Fest, Paul Collette.